Okay, how do you want to start?
Well, I was thinking about starting exactly this way, with trying to figure out how we were going to start. Since you're the one hosting this one, why don't you take it away?
Oh, man. Well, hello, everyone. I don't know if you've heard my episode yet. My voice may be unfamiliar to you outside of Halloween is Grinch Night, but this is Bailey. I will be hosting this week because it is Bailey's birthday episode. So happy birthday, Bailey.
Thank you. So
I'm very excited. And so to kick us off, what movie are we talking about, Bailey?
Well, just to let everybody know, this is Memory Static. And we are going to be watching Raggedy Ann and Andy's A Musical Adventure. And I cannot wait to see what everybody has to say about this because it is such a wild movie.
I am very excited. For those who don't know, the time machine should still have cucumber water, and that joke will either land or not, depending on where this episode falls. For those who don't know, I have cooked up some questions for Bailey that I'm very excited about. And so to get us started, why did you choose this movie, Bailey?
You know, that's a good question, and I wish that I had more personal answers like what everybody else usually has behind the choices that they make. I watched this movie as a child, obviously. We had it recorded onto VHS. I don't know. I've never really been able to pick favorites. I don't know if this is on the same tier as, say, Labyrinth or Neverending Story, but I did watch it a lot, and I really loved it because it is so weird. And I always was very attracted to the weird stuff and the scary stuff, and this has both. I mean, because some of the weird stuff is so strange that it makes you uncomfortable, and I think as a kid, it's really hard to understand what's happening in this movie, because I think it definitely is one of the most imaginative movies that I watched as a kid, and that's saying a lot because there were a lot of imaginative movies that came out of the 80s, but also it has songs in it, and I really love the songs. I've always loved the gimmick of having live action become animation or having animation and live action interact with one another like Mary Poppins. But this one is particularly cool because they're all of the toys and you see them in real life, this little girl's room, and then everything becomes animated and all of the toys come to life. And that's just, it's such a cool way of handling it, I think. Because this was Toy Story before Toy Story. But yeah, I chose this movie specifically because I feel it is one of the movies that I watched as a kid that will likely never be chosen by someone else. And so that's generally what I'm going to go for.
No, I absolutely feel that. This movie, I thought of this fun story this morning to tell you about my history with this movie, which is I'm 98% sure I was sick a lot as a kid, and so my treat was I was obsessed with like Big Lots and Family Dollar and Dollar General and like those types of stores. And so I would get to pick out a movie after a doctor's appointment. Mm-hmm. And so like that's how I stumbled upon like Ketchup Vampires and like things like that, like that just hole in the wall niche stuff. And I think that's how I found this movie. I'm 98% sure this was a VHS after a doctor's appointment from like a Big Lots or something, pretty certain. So I was like, I'm sure that Bailey would love that little factoid.
That's awesome. Do you remember how you took it in?
I mean, I vividly remembered one of the villains in it when I was revisiting this to educate you about this film. I remembered the Greedy.
Yeah, that's the one.
This like weird, like, gluttonous level of Dante's Inferno thing that we have happening. Oh man, I was like vividly remembered that. That stuck with me. And then I remembered slightly the camel and how he basically has PTSD. And so
I love the camel. The camel was always one of my favorites, and I love his song.
I love him so much. The camel with the saggy knees.
That's right, the saggy knees.
Precious, absolutely precious. I'm like, am I gonna search eBay later to see if there's a stuffed animal of him somewhere? Probably. Is there? Probably not, but I would love one.
I think I looked that up once several years ago, the last time I watched this movie. So it has been like probably about 8 years since I've seen this movie. but I have watched it as an adult. But when I did watch it, I was like, man, this movie is so cool. And I looked to see if I could find any memorabilia from it. And they did make a really detailed stuffed animal of the saggy kneed camel. But it was so rare because this wasn't the big movie that it was very expensive.
Oh, I bet. I'm like, now I just want to get some felt and like sew myself a little hodgepodge one. And I'm like, I think that'll be even better. Speaking of like stuffed animals and, you know, like fun things, one of the ideas in this movie starts with a birthday present. And so, Bailey, when you were a kid, what was your favorite birthday present you ever got, or just one like you vividly remember being excited about?
That's a really good question. You know, I had forgotten that this movie started with a birthday, which is really funny that this is my birthday movie. But let's see. Well, I do remember when I was in first grade that I got a Nintendo, and that was super exciting because that was back in 1991. And it was just like over the moon exciting. But let's see. When I was in fifth grade, we went to one of those Plaster of Paris painting places for my birthday, and that was really fun. And I opened gifts there in the store. And that year, I was super obsessed with Animaniacs. I just love the anime. I still love the Animaniacs.
Quality entertainment for sure.
My flying squirrel is named Yakko. I've never grown out of it. So for my birthday that year, I got an umbrella with all of the Warner faces on it. I still have it. It's in my entryway in my house. There's a hole in it, so it doesn't really work as an umbrella, but you could use it as like a parasol.
That's so cool.
And then I also, for that same birthday, got a praying mantis puppet. And that year, I had... this is totally a tangent, and I wasn't expecting to tell this story. When I was in fifth grade, I convinced a boy to trade this praying mantis that he found for something. I have no idea what it was I traded. Obviously, it was a better trade for me because whatever I gave, like I feel like I was just really, really good at convincing people to do the thing that I wanted them to do when I was a kid. I lost that ability, but either that or I recognize it as manipulation and I don't do it anymore. One or the other. But he gave me the praying mantis, and it was very large, and it was a female. And for recess, this is another thing, I convinced my group of friends. We had a club called the Friendship Club, which our teacher made us change the name because it was originally called the Gossip Club. Which we didn't know that gossip was mean. We were just like, we just want to chit-chat with each other. So the Friendship Club, I guess I was the leader, and I made all of it, like, for during recess, we would all go out and catch grasshoppers to feed to the praying mantis that we hung out with the rest of the recess, feeding it grasshoppers. Well, her name was Buttercup, and she laid eggs and then she died, which is what they do. That's the end of their life cycle. And we gave her a little funeral outside of the temporary building that the fifth grade was in. And then the eggs eventually hatched, and we had all these baby praying mantises, and they were just inside this jar. And I put little bit of water on the bottom of the jar, and I knew they needed food. So I went and got aphids off of the bushes around and put them in there, because I thought maybe that's small enough for the baby praying mantises to eat. And I was right. But then they were just stuck in there, and they were drowning in the water, and there just wasn't any room for them to go anywhere. And so I told my fifth grade teacher, we need to let these go. We need to put these outside. And she was like, no. No, this is our science project, and like, this is interesting, and we're going to keep it. And so, you know what I did? When we had a substitute teacher, I just took the jar home and let all the baby praying mantises go. And I know that my teacher, Miss Barton, was upset about it, but like, how could she really punish me for that?
You had me at substitute teacher. I was like, as soon as you said those two words, I'm like, I know exactly how this story is going to end.
So that is why I got a praying mantis puppet for my birthday that year, and I named it Buttercup.
I love that. What a what a roller coaster of a story. You have life, you have death, you have conning a substitute teacher. It's everything that you could ask for in a good narrative, I think.
Thanks.
Oh man, that's so good. So in the film as well, I'm like, I don't want to give a lot of spoilies here, but there are toys and there are several toys. There's Raggedy Ann and Andy, obviously. There's Babette, who's the birthday present that we mentioned, who's this like beautiful porcelain doll. There's the captain. There are just the Saguenay camel, which is my favorite. And there are just so many different toys and creatures. And so my question for you, Bailey, would be, if you could be any toy that's not in this movie, but you would be a toy in this movie, what would you be? What would you add for flair?
For flair, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is a toy that I think my sister had when we were little. It was this little robot dog. Not like the cool robot things that they have now. All it did was it walked forward a little bit and it looked like a little stuffed animal, and it stopped and it would bark like burr, 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 and then it would do a little yoga pose and then spring into the air into a backflip, and then it would do the whole thing over again. And I think like that's the first thing that popped into my head, because, well, really just because I cannot do a backflip in real life, and I think that as a toy, it'd be awesome if I could.
Would you keep your name, or would you have a new name for this movie?
Well, Bailey, I feel like you might understand this, but apparently Bailey is a very popular dog name.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah, so it would make sense for me to keep my name. It would translate well, I guess.
Oh yeah, no, I know. And especially there's a Dennis Quaid film that came out recently. It's like A Dog's Purpose, I believe is what it's called. And the name of the dog in that movie is Bailey. Mm-hmm. So, yep, no, I relate to that. So speaking of toys, AKA this film, when you were a kid, did you ever like try to sneak and see if your toys came to life? Did you believe that your toys came to life when you left? What was your ideology like as a kid?
So I don't think that I really believed that my toys came to life, but I liked to pretend that I believed that my toys came to life, if that makes sense. I definitely put a bunch of stuffed animals around my bed to protect me from vampires, because I was very afraid of vampires as a child. I slept with my blanket tucked up way around my neck because that was the only thing I could think to do to protect my neck from vampires. I had a poster of the Tiny Toons that I liked to imagine that the animated world that they lived in was just beyond the paper of that poster, and that they were alive in that poster, that I just couldn't cross that threshold. So, sort of.
No, I get that. It's in my head for some reason, made me think of the Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah, that was my problem. I just needed to lift the poster and there would have been a hole to Toontown.
Exactly. You didn't tunnel hard enough behind your Tiny Toons poster. Oh, man. So you've seen this movie as an adult, right, Bailey? You said?
Yes.
8 years, I would say, is like kind of recently enough to like remember a little bit of it, maybe possibly.
Yeah, I think I remember most of it. I just don't remember the details.
Okay, beautiful. Do you remember the songs from this feature film?
I remember a few of the songs, yes.
Okay, out of the ones you remember, what is your favorite and why is it your favorite?
I think my favorite would have to be the Saguenay Camel song. How can you be laughing? How can you be smiling? How can you be anything but low down baggy and ragtag taggy and blue? Yeah, I always liked the sad characters and the sad songs. And also, my mom would sing that song a lot. I think everybody loved the Saguenay Camel. You know, it's the Eeyore of the movie, and who doesn't love Eeyore?
Oh, I fully agree with you. That character, I was like, I relate to you. I'm like, you just want to be included, man. It's okay. That we get it. We all get it. But that was a beautiful job, by the way. You nailed it.
Thank you.
One of my favorite songs as well.
The other song that comes to mind, I don't think it's my favorite song, but it's definitely my favorite scene, is the scene with the greedy. And he's without a sweetheart, I can never get enough, which to me is like, I loved the double entendre there, because like, you think he's talking about a sweetheart, like a lover, but then this is going to be a mild spoiler, but there turns out to be an actual candy heart that he thinks is going to make him feel satisfied.
Yeah, that scene, again, when I watched it, I was like, this is like some Dante's Inferno level insanity.
It is the trippiest part of the movie.
I mean, everybody will see for themselves, but it...
I think the animators had a lot of fun designing that scene, because it's so wild.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, the animation in this movie is so cool. I've been telling Bailey, I've been teasing Bailey for a few days now about some of the things that I found about this movie. But the animation of this movie is just so cool. And it's so, for the 70s, this animation is just above and beyond what you really saw at that time, because a lot of it was really rudimentary. And that's why on Memory Static, people... I'll plug the podcast that we're currently on, but on this podcast, some of the movies that people pick or that Bailey's chosen in the past, it's really cool to see these little movies, because these little niche movies were the ones that were really revolutionary at the time with their animation. And so this movie is obviously not any different, because some of the things, and again, there are a couple techniques in here that I nerded out over because it's very cool, were very advanced for the time. And so I'm very excited about this movie.
Oh, I cannot wait to learn.
Okay, so those are all the questions I have for you, Bailey.
Oh, okay.
I think it may be time.
For the slow-moving time machine?
Slow-moving time machine, yeah. My brain stopped working while I was trying to say slow-moving time machine. But I think it's about time.
Okay, great. Well, I've got it tuned up and ready to go. You know, it should already be where you are.
Okay, perfect.
One thing I want to say before we go into the slow-moving time machine, that in these episodes, we do have original songs at the end of the episode, so make sure to listen through to the end for the original song. Also, if you want to watch this movie, I believe it is available on YouTube for free.
That is absolutely where I watched it, and it's actually very cool because it is off of 35mm, so you have like the cigarette burns and stuff in the corner, and it's very nifty.
Great. Okay, well... that's it. That's all I wanted to say. So let's get in there.
Downloading. Update. Installing. Update. Please do not turn off your time machine. Installing. Update. Beanbag.
Error. Restarting. Installing. Update. I'm just thinking for a second. Chill maxing. Oh, I remember. Okay, here we go.
Enjoy. Maximum lumbar support.
Okay. I mean, I am in a beanbag chair surrounded by coconut water. Bailey, I don't know how your experience is across from me, but that's the situation that I'm currently in.
Oh, you know, I had forgotten that we had made these updates, that the slow-moving time machine now anticipates what it is that makes you feel most comfortable and manifests that for you. Like, I am just the astonishment at my own brilliance just never ceases to amaze me.
Bailey is so good, she forgets the things that she does.
Yeah, I just, you know, I create, and then it leaves my brain, and then I'm like, oh, who thought of that? And I'm like, of course, it was me.
It was I, the birthday person.
Yeah, so what I have now is like one of those really nice recliners. It's actually one of the old ones from, you know, the 80s, so it's kind of clunky, but it's going to make me feel most at home thinking about this movie that I watched back then.
Perfect. I'm so excited. Are you snuggled in? Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about Raggedy Ann and Andy, A Musical Adventure.
Yay!
I'm so excited. So this film came out in 1977, and it is directed by Richard Williams, who he's most famously known as being the animation director for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He actually won 2 Oscars for it.
I did not know that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my brain.
Well, he also did the famous, I'll get to this in a minute, But do you know about The Thief and the Cobbler, his unfinished masterpiece?
I do, but I've never seen it.
Okay, see, that was also his. And then he also worked on the Pink Panther cartoons. So he's done so many things. So that's why the animation in this is so good, because, like, look at who the director was.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. Like, I knew that the same director of Who Framed Roger Rabbit was the Prince and the Cobbler, and that his animation was really cool, and he wasn't given, like, I know his story is really sad. I had no idea that he worked on this too. No wonder it stands out.
Uh-huh, and he won 2 Oscars, baby, so that's very cool. He also won an Oscar for, in 1971, he won for Best Animated Short Film for his adaptation of A Christmas Carol. So I thought that was very nifty. And so this movie, it's actually a 20th Century Fox movie. They pitched it to Universal and Warner Brothers, and they both turned it down and said, no, thank you. So they finally got it to 20th Century Fox. And then the music on this is from Joe Raposo, who wrote the music for Sesame Street, The Electric Company, Halloween is Grinch Night, and my personal favorite note on here, the theme song for the hit John Ritter show Three's Company.
Amazing. Yeah, I remember coming across his name when we did Halloween is Grinch Night.
Mm-hmm.
Very talented man.
Jack of all trades, for sure. So another cool thing about this movie is Tissa David became one of the first female animators to animate a leading character in Raggedy Ann. So I thought that was very interesting. And then also, this quote just made me laugh very hard. So Art Babbitt, who was working for him at the time, Art Babbitt, he created Goofy. He worked on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, a bunch of stuff for Disney. Wow. Yeah, he's very cool. He said this of Richard Williams. He's a director, designer, animator, and has a good layman's knowledge of music. He's a dreamer. He has more to learn as far as animation is concerned, but God, he can draw like a bastard. And that's a real quote.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I thought that was very cool that someone who has worked on Disney and, like, big Disney films, like big feature films that, I mean, came out ages ago that we still talk about today and that, you know, are still cherished and beloved.
That recognized that spark in him.
Exactly. They also, to kind of mimic how we're working today, they all worked remotely. There was no central studio where they all came in to animate.
Oh my gosh. What?
Yep.
Wow. So they're all just working from their homes?
Yes, they all worked. I couldn't find exactly like where each was located or anything, but they all worked remotely. There was no central animation studio for this film.
What was the budget?
I couldn't find the budget to save my life, but if I can find it in a minute, I will. But yeah, that's just to mimic life now. They all worked remotely. And then when I said I had a cool factoid about when you were talking about earlier, cartoon transitioning into real life. So these animations were used to test something called Video Cell, which is like a rudimentary CGI system that was created by Computer Creations Corp.
They use computer animation in this movie?
It was used to test something called Video Cell. So it was like compared to, in my research, it's compared to like an early CGI system.
Wow. I had never picked up on that.
Isn't it cool? This movie is so cool. Like, that's what I was telling you. Like, the little factoids in it, there's not too much about this, but the things that there are very cool.
So it was very experimental.
Yes. And speaking of experimental, so I mentioned earlier The Thief and the Cobbler. Richard Williams, like, it was supposed to be his magnum opus, essentially. And so for 20 years, he worked on this film. And at the end of 20 years, he'd only animated 20 minutes. And people like Vincent Price had done voice work. It was supposed to be really cool. But what happened was the Completion Bond Company, who was kind of financing him and running it, were afraid of Aladdin being a big competitor because it was at that same time. And so what they did is they basically cannibalized things that he had done, threw together some stuff. And so the released version that was released on VHS, and it was like a really limited release, is nowhere near like the majestic animated piece that Richard Williams had created. And so a lot of people now, you can find on YouTube, and there's a whole restoration process in progress, but you can see now, and I'll send it to you later, you can see like whole scenes that have been restored to mimic what Richard Williams was intending. And like with Vincent Price voicing the bad guy that's like, would be akin to Jafar in Aladdin. And it's just like black and white, like kind of psychedelic. And I mean, it was so far ahead of its time, and it's very sad that it was never like publicly released in its full glory. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's a little bit of background on Richard Williams. So like for this film being so unknown, a lot of really cool and revolutionary things happened behind the scenes with it.
Yeah.
So a little bit more about the film itself.
All right.
So Richard Williams was not the original director.
No.
Abe Levitow was. And if you're like, does that name sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
It's because he did The Phantom Tollbooth.
Uh-huh.
Gay Puri.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Magoo, and The Bugs Bunny Show.
Wow.
So he passed away, and that's how Richard Williams got this film.
Ah, okay.
So there are some memory static veteran films on this list, and I was like, as soon as I say this name, Bailey's probably going to know exactly who I'm talking about, but that's another cool tidbit.
Wow.
Also, this made me laugh a little bit hard. So Didi Khan, who does the voice of Raggedy and who most people know from Grease and Grease 2, she's Frenchie.
Oh, wow.
That's Didi Khan.
Okay, when I'm watching the movie, I'm going to listen for that.
You can definitely hear it, but she did have, there are parts of the film where she had laryngitis, and so she was embarrassed about how it turned out, but Richard Williams actually liked it better because he thought it evoked more emotion.
Oh.
So there are parts where she's a little raspy, but he kept it in because he thought it was awesome.
It's like the thing that they told us at Ren Faire, whenever something bad was happening, make it your character's problem.
Exactly. Just yes and it. Mm-hmm. And so it wound up working out really well. But before Raggedy Ann, two of the people that they were considering were Liza Minnelli.
Okay.
And Goldie Hawn.
Wow, both would have been so different.
Yes. I'm like, Goldie Hawn, I immediately just think of First Wives Club. There's that. Then I'm like, Liza, that would have been a performance.
Yeah, it really would have been an entirely different movie because it just would have been much more Broadway, I guess.
I think so, like more like theatrical.
Right, whereas Frenchie, it felt more like a cartoon character voice.
Like it would have been a little bit mismatched.
Right, well, it's like Rita and Runt in Animaniacs, how Bernadette Peters does Rita. And I'm not 100% certain, but I feel as though that character was crafted with her in mind. And Raggedy Ann was already an existing character. And I think like having someone that's such a huge Broadway personality and inserting it into an already established character just doesn't make as much sense in my mind. I know like Didi Khan. So whereas I do know her from Grease, she's not as like as much of a household name as Liza Minnelli.
Exactly. I agree. And that's why I think some of these movies stuck with me so well. So there were also at least 10 additional songs written for this movie that were rejected before the recording sessions. So Raggedy Andy had a song that was called I Like Wrasslin'. R-A-S-S-L-I-N. So I'm like, there you go. Which it's like similar to I'm No Girl's Toy. So it's, right. Like, it's similar to the song that he sang, but it was another song in addition to that. There was also, you know how in the 80s and 90s you had like specific songs written for movies that had like some sort of dance move or some sort of like tonality that matched the film, and it was like, this is recorded just for this film. Mm-hmm. There was originally a song that would have been similar to that called The Raggedy Rag, which would have been an anthem for the loonies of Looney Land.
Okay. Okay. The Raggedy Rag.
The Raggedy Rag. So that almost happened. I think, fortunately, it did not on that.
Right.
And then there was a song that Raggedy Ann sang to Marcella, which is the little girl whose room they live in and all belong to. And then also there was a song about Fifi, who eventually became Babette. She was originally named Fifi, and they changed that, which I also think is a good change because that just, again, doesn't quite match.
Babette's a great name.
Babette's a good name. It just has that punch to it. So this is actually also a very, very cool and very sad. But this film was last released on home media in VHS form in 1992.
So it has not been released since. It
has not been released since. No DVD release is even scheduled.
Could you figure out why?
They said just due to legal issues.
You know, I wonder how many things have just been lost that way. Luckily, it's on YouTube, but I have tried many times to find Muppet Babies. And from what I can tell, there is a issue over who owns it in order to distribute it and make money off of it. And so it is just this thing that is buried. That makes me really sad.
Yeah, in a similar fashion to that, the widescreen and high def transfers have been leaked online by fans who source them in the 35 millimeter print. So you can watch this movie on YouTube. And it's very cool because it still has like some of the markings of a 35 millimeter film. But again, that's the only place that you can really find it. I didn't look on eBay to see if there were any VHS copies lying around. I'm sure if so, they're probably very expensive.
I have a DVD burnt from the VHS copy that we had. I was going to test it to see if that worked, but if there's a 35 millimeter copy on YouTube, I think we should probably watch that instead.
Yeah, that's what I watched, and it was very cool. But the one good piece of news I have here is Garrett Gilchrist, who is working on restoring The Thief and the Cobbler. He restored this film in widescreen, and he is one of the people that got this up on YouTube. Even though it's still the 35 millimeter, like I said, you can see the things. He's one of the people who actually got this in full up on YouTube.
It's nice that there are some people that care.
What he's been able to piece together from The Thief and the Cobbler is called the Recobbled Cut, which I very much enjoyed. Kudos to him, because I think that's very cool what he's doing and like trying to get this work out here, because Richard Williams is a very talented animator and I definitely think we need to see his work.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit is one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's so good. For some reason, I would always watch that and the Mario Brothers movie hand in hand. And I don't know if it's because like it's that similar like...
I could tell you why.
Animated? Yeah, tell me.
They're both starring Bob Hoskins.
You were 1,000% correct.
And he's such a lovely person.
That's absolutely it. Mystery solved. Okay, it's been nice talking to you.
I mean, you've seen The Time Machine. You know that I'm a genius.
For sure. I can attest to that. Bailey just figured out why that was one of my favorite double features as a kid. This is just a fun thing. In this film, there is a little Easter egg.
Oh.
And it's with the character Gadzooks. His telephone says ITT, which stands for the International Telephone and Telegraph Corporation, and they produced this film.
Ah, how about that?
And this film has also it's been adapted for the stage twice. There's some weird stuff with this adaptation. Joe Raposo tried to adapt it, and at one point it was like it opened in Moscow and like he made it a little bit darker. I don't know what the point was there. I think it was to get the movie out. At one point it opened in Moscow. It failed almost immediately on Broadway. It flopped before it even fully opened.
Was Raggedy Ann and Andy really popular in Russia?
I have no idea. It just said that that's where he chose to do one of the adaptations, was in Moscow.
I like to imagine that not only was it a musical, but it was also a ballet.
The fact that it's in Russia, and it's also like, this is very dark, I would assume it was a ballet. That would just be immediately where my brain went. And again, I couldn't find a lot of research on it, but he tried to adapt it and kind of morph it. But it just, unfortunately, it never made that transition into a musical or a play.
You know, I guess it should have been adapted into like a children's musical, because then it probably still would be put on in middle schools to this very day.
Like, it would be something that my one act group would absolutely do in high school. I can tell you right now, like for their children's performance, because they always did like their UIL and then their children's. And I can guarantee you that would be something that they would have chosen. So when critics saw this film, it did not do well.
Why?
A couple of very silly reasons. I could not find, I looked so hard, I was trying to find the actual reviews. Could not find them. But here are the two big reoccurring things I saw everywhere I looked.
Oh no.
And the first was, as we know, in children's movies, there are sometimes very suggestive things, you know, like with the live action Scooby-Doo, you know, like how her name's Mary Jane and Shaggy loves her, basically 9/10 of Shrek, things like that. Like there are little things that are woven in there just for adults or, you know, guardians or whoever's watching kids.
Yeah.
So the first big issue that they took with this film was when the captain sees Babette, his mustache stiffens and he dances, which they believed to be gyrating.
Oh.
And so they took major issue with his mustache stiffening. They took that as an innuendo. And he does this weird little dance that it's almost to me, it like almost looks like the truffle shuffle from the Goonies. Like it's just, it's this weird little back and forth thing. And they thought that was gyrating. So they thought this man was pelvic thrusting and his mustache got suggestively stiff. And that really bothered a lot of people.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Like, kids wouldn't get that at all.
No. And to me, the gyrating I can kind of see. It's a little pelvic thrusty, time warpy. I get it. But the mustache stiffening, it's a little questionable because it's just like his whole body. And so I guess, I don't know if that makes it better or worse. But for me, I was like, that's a little iffy. And I'm like, I get the gyrating. But that was a big issue that they took with this film. They
were like, okay, well, if memory serves, his mustache is kind of like, isn't it almost like extra limbs in a way? Like, it's definitely super expressive.
It's this giant, like, walrus mustache.
Yeah, and it moves on its own like octopus arms.
Yeah, right? It's kind of like in, if people remember Garfield and Friends, how the duck's inner tube, like, mimics, like, his facial expressions and stuff. It's very much that. Like, it's like a secondary thing.
You know, I would have never, even as an adult, you know, and I know sometimes it's hard, like, to process things completely as an adult when you've seen them a lot as a child. Like, the impressions that you have still influence you. But I have a really hard time imagining that watching it this time around, that's what I would think of when seeing his mustache stiffen. Like, I think that there are so many instances in cartoons where a character sees someone that they think is hot and their whole body gets stiff. That is just, it's a trope that you see in cartoons over and over and over and over again. And maybe that is in itself an innuendo. I don't know, but it's not new to this cartoon.
No, because I mean, this was in 77. Like you're talking about like the height of in 77. I mean, you have, I think Animal House is already out. So I'm like, you already have all these like raunchy movies and things that are out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like,
So what was the other thing that the critics didn't like? I feel like that's such a nitpicky thing to focus on and to like damn the whole movie, you know?
Oh, this one's not any better. Like, I'm gonna warn you now, you're not gonna be any happier about the second one. So the second issue. So like you mentioned earlier, Raggedy Ann and Andy have been around for a while. Like they've been around since like the 30s or 40s was the earliest thing that I saw of them. So in the canon of Raggedy Ann and Andy, they are sweethearts. Okay. In this movie, she introduces Andy as her brother to Babette.
Mm-hmm.
Critics had an issue because they felt as though the relationship was odd because although Anne introduces Andy as her brother to Babette, he basically sings her a love song later. And they took issue with that because it alluded to either an incestuous relationship or that the movie, like there was a continuity error.
I never thought that. I just thought it was like, these are siblings that really care about each other.
I do not agree. It is not a love song to me. It is a I will be there song. To me, that is how I take it. However, they did not take it as that and immediately went to incest.
Wow, I think that's more telling of these critics than it is of the movie, to be honest.
They said it's either incestuous or there's a continuity error and like you meant for them to be partners, but you left in that she introduces Andy as her brother.
Yeah.
Those are the things they got hung up on.
Wow. And didn't think about like the animation or the storytelling or anything. Wow.
Those are the two big things that I kept finding.
Huh. Well.
Yep. That's what bothered them most about this movie.
Yeah.
Not the greedy, which again, the greedy's slightly terrifying because it's very much, like I keep saying, it is like something you would find in the gluttony level of Dante's Inferno. No, we're fine with that. We're fine with the camel with the saggy knees almost losing his mind, just trying to get back home and having like very like PTSD episodes. We're fine with that. We're going to draw the line because the captain does a funny dance and his mustache gets stiff. And Anne and Andy, we don't know if they're partners or brother and sister.
Yeah. I only ever thought that they were brother and sister and that they were there to support each other. That's it.
No, I didn't know there was this whole like canon of Raggedy Ann and Andy where they were apparently partners. And I was like, oh, I always thought they were brother and sister.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first time I'm hearing they're not brother and sister.
They look so much alike that if they were not brother and sister, it's one of those situations where they are both narcissists and attracted to themselves.
Yeah, no, I told you it was not going to get better. I told you after the first, like the second one, it wasn't like, we have an issue that's an actual issue with like something in the storyline or something. Mm. No, Bailey.
You know, I kind of wonder if maybe it was, something born out of some remnants from the 60s and maybe moving into the early 70s where it was moving out of the Hays Code, the production code. There was all of that stuff in the 60s about trying to find hidden messages in music. So maybe there was just a lot of paranoia that things like that would work their way into children's programming.
Oh, yeah. And see, we're coming right out of the heyday of Rocky Horror, too. Like, when you think about it, I'm like, this is like, because Rocky Horror first came out in 75. And so I'm like, you have like this, like you said, coming out of the Hays Code, you have like this new like sexual liberation you're seeing a lot of in movies. And so I'm like, I almost think that you're 1,000% right and that that's what's happening is that they're reading more into it than they should. And they're not fully understanding the source material. I'm like, this is not Rocky Horror Picture Show. This is a children's animated film. We're not, there aren't innuendos in here. We're not singing to Susan Sarandon in our underwear. Like, this is a children's film. That's it. This isn't like, we're not making a statement. This is a musical adventure. That's why this movie didn't do well. It wasn't received well. And so, like I said earlier, after 1992, it wasn't even released anymore.
So sad.
But yeah, so that is Raggedy Ann and Andy, a musical adventure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing the research.
Of course, I enjoyed it. And like I said, listeners, I've been teasing Bailey all week and I'm like, there are so many cool things I have to tell you. I'm so excited. So I'm so excited that I finally got to tell you.
Yeah, this has been great learning about it. I can't wait to hear what everybody else has to say.
Me too. And as comfy as this beanbag chair is.
Yeah, I'm ready to get to that party.
I am too. Let's go ahead and I'll see you on the other side.
I'll see you in my backyard.
Spawning beanbags, recycling cocoa nut water, incinerating recliner chair, downgrading chill max vibes to optimize performance, defragmenting EDM relaxation elements. Goodbye.
All right. We have just finished Raggedy Ann and Andy's musical adventure, and I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone has to say. Bailey, take it away.
Okay, so to get us started, what are some of y'all's favorite things that like you played pretend as a kid or some of the best imaginary adventures that you went on?
I remember forts were a big deal. And that was like cushion forts was a thing. And maybe even taking that outside to the creek bed at some point. So I definitely, yeah, some of the stuff where just being outside took you to another world in this movie was familiar to me.
Yeah, so similar to their imagination of being like on the ocean and far away from everything and like living this grand life, and then reality when it goes to the live action, they're just like in a small pond in the backyard. One of my favorite things to do playing pretend as a child was we had lots of dirt in our backyard, and I would just build things out of dirt and mud, make little fortresses and pretend to be a witch. And that was my favorite game to play.
I grew up in a neighborhood with no other children. Well, one other child, but he got taken away for lighting his house on fire by piling a bunch of leaves on the stove and turning it on. So I grew up on the block with no children. And my stuffed animals were my friends. So I had a lot of pretend time where I would play chess with them and I would always just barely win and things like that. But many animal friends.
My stuffed animals often were sick and needed to go to the hospital. And my sister and I would set up the stuffed animal hospital ward and check everyone in and then tuck everyone into their hospital beds. And that was the end of the game. I don't think they ever got better. We just kept checking them into the hospital.
Kid, I would mainly play with Legos. Like, I would dig dirt holes as well and put water in them and kind of build bridges and stuff. But it's always a little weird watching movies about non-Lego toys because, I don't know, I didn't have any toys like that. It was mostly just Legos. You could make any other sort of toy. That was always kind of how I felt about it. So they seemed, yeah, anyway, dirt holes and water. That totally works.
Dirt holes and waters can be anything you want them to be, just like Legos.
I remember a vivid part of my childhood was moving into a neighborhood that was still in development. So it was a lot of running around in like pre-built houses and like climbing on 2x4s and such. And actually playing in mud as well is something that I remember very clearly, except we would also involve toads and we would make little toad villages and like run water through like the little rivers and valleys that we made and then just trap them in holes. But it was good play. Toads can be toys.
Now that we've gone through like your adventures, did you think as a kid that your toys came alive? Or did you believe in anything of that nature?
I really, really, really wanted that to be true. And I had read children's stories and books where that was true. And so I would like give my toys the chance to move around and then like pop back real quick to see if I could catch them. But I never found the proof that I wanted.
I definitely like didn't think that, but I would feel bad for inanimate objects when I would have to leave them alone or throw them away or something. I think that's because I saw The Brave Little Toaster when I was really young, which is, I guess, kind of similar. Like, there's probably a lot of similar, you can compare these movies. And in that, you know, it's the old discarded stuff that gets left behind at the old house. And so, like, whenever I would have to trash even, like, oh, I feel bad throwing this thing away. Like, it's going to be abandoned and sad. So not really living on its own or anything, but I think I even knew at the time, like, it's kind of weird to be feeling these feelings for things that don't feel, but I kind of feel like they do.
I still own a large collection of stuffed animals to this day, and I feel like I have to organize them and make sure that they're all sitting face forward and like nobody's face is being sat on by another one. Otherwise, I feel like they're going to get pissed off at me. So like, I would say that my beliefs stand firm to this day.
Okay. This is the $1 million question because the greedy freaked me out a lot in this movie. It was this weird kind of Dante's Inferno level of gluttony thing that I hated. And so my question for y'all is, what do you think the greedy represents?
I would like to know what the greedy literally is. I mean, I didn't have a pit of caramel in my backyard. Like, I don't know. Everything else you could kind of see.
Well, I grew up in Florida and the swamp is real. I feel like that could just be the swamp, the greedy, sucking everything into it. You know, that quicksand motif of children's movies.
Yeah, I hated the greedy.
I had to walk out. I hated that. And it honestly, when you say like what it represented, sometimes kids movies like this, it's like the adult writer like sort of tried to rope in something that might mean something. But then it's like it didn't quite stick the landing. And it's like, what does this mean? I mean, I agree. He's like, oh, I eat and eat, but I'm never satisfied. And Raggedy Ann is like, that's horrible. And like, your brain is like, okay, yeah, that almost means something. But there's not really a one-to-one line between that and real life that I can figure out. But it's like, yeah, greed. Mm-mm, don't do that.
I think the sweetheart he was looking for, really, he just needed another salad.
For me, when I was watching Mr. Greedy, so I'm also a social worker, and my psychoanalytic brain went to addiction because he was saying, you know, I eat and eat and eat and I do all this, but it doesn't satisfy me. So I instantly thought of addiction with that, and then needing to have a person to fulfill that hole in his heart is just like, then when I heard that, I was like, well, that's pretty toxic right there. But yeah, I thought that was pretty fascinating, seeing just like clear addiction in my eyes.
It is a metaphor for the hollowness of seeking pleasure and the ultimate futility of seeking pleasure.
So something someone said actually made me think of another question. Because the reason critics hated this movie is because they didn't like that when the captain saw Babette, his mustache stiffened and that he gyrated. And then they also hated that Raggedy Ann and Andy are brother and sister, but they said that the song they sing together is kind of a love song. And so they had an issue with that. And so my question for y'all is, do you agree with that, that there are a lot of adult themes running in this movie? Or do you think that the critics were wrong on this one?
I fully agree with that. The captain and the Babette storyline was super upsetting. There was only one good part of it, and they ended the good part quickly when she had like taken over the ship and like put him in chains. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, Babette. Sorry. And I liked that part. Then she like pitied him again and was like sweet to him. And I was like, I love you and you can come into my house on Sunday, which was weird. But yeah, I really hated that pirate captain and his gyrating belly.
So I actually went inside and I missed that part. But I feel like, because I think that I might have seen the reprieve of it at the very end with his belly bouncing. Is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I think when I was a kid, I interpreted that as while you're singing and you're like an operatic singer, your diaphragm like can control your vibrato in a way. Like you can have a vibrato in your voice, but then a vibrato like by using your diaphragm. And I guess that is what I imagined it was as a kid. So I missed it, but I trust y'all's opinion on this.
I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
And it just came off as kind of thrusting.
If that's what they were going for, why was he the only one that did it? Everyone sang.
Yeah, he also was the only one, I think, that sang operatically, right?
I was not paying attention to that. You'll have to tell me.
In terms of the brother-sister love song, I thought that was really sweet. And I think that critics that are like, a brother and sister can't sing a love song together, like, I get where they're coming from, but these are children's dolls devoid of any sexuality. And so the fact that that's not even an option makes it more believable that they could be such good friends.
I missed that scene, but it does seem kind of like that might be the critics projecting a little bit. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I also thought that song was fine. I don't think there's a problem there.
I mean, we have a brother and sister here. Would you guys sing a song similar to that to each other? Just talking about how, like, you all are awesome and you love each other?
Can you do it right now?
Candy hearts and paper flowers, whiling away the hours. I'll always be there close to you. Ooh.
Well, nothing awkward about that.
By the way, that song was great. I really liked that song. I think that that's one of the best songs in the movie.
I thought the music in this movie was great in general. Full stop. The end. Here on Memory Static,
We've covered several children's special animated movies, and the music quality of like composition and stuff is not always great, but I think that in this film it was pretty awesome. Clever lyrics, good musical innovations, etc. 4.5 out of 5.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
How do you feel about this music compared to the music in Halloween is Grinch Night?
It's better.
Would you be surprised to learn that it's the same composer?
I mean, you know, everyone has bad days.
I thought it was really fun that every animator got to have their own character song to animate. It's kind of like a series of vignettes more than a plot.
How does everybody feel about the saggy-kneed camel and his song? That's what I want to know.
I was about to mention, it's a very depressing song. And yeah, he even had like a little bit of suicidal ideation, going at it with like going off of a cliff and the hallucinations as well. That was interesting. And I guess I can really feel it because I'm currently working with the homeless populations.
I feel like that colorful eyes thing is like trope that happens during a certain like animation genre. Like what other shows or movies that we can think of have those rainbow eyes to depict like hallucination or insanity?
I wanted to talk a little bit about all the tropes that are in this movie that I recognize from later movies. And I wonder if there's influence. The rainbow eyes are one. Being friends with the stars is another one. They did that in the Disney Tiana movie. And there are a couple other things that are not in my mind right now, but it seems like a lot of animators watched this movie and then went on to do more animation.
The rainbow eyes is an Alice in Wonderland thing too, right? Maybe not rainbow. I guess it's like a black and white. Doesn't the cat, the Cheshire Cat, do that? Yeah. Also, I don't know why I'm still unclear as to why he was hallucinating in the first place. I mean,
he was a camel. He's from the desert. It was a mirage.
Oh, he did say mirage, right?
Did anybody else notice that while he's singing that really sad, depressing song, Raggedy Ann and Andy are like smiling and doing the jig in the corner, like having a little bit of joy to his little song?
Andy had some of the best lines in the movie, just being like the straight-faced guy and being like, this is some weird shit we're doing, Andy.
Was Andy a later toy addition? As in, Raggedy Ann was the original doll, right? And Andy probably came out later. Because it seemed like they were really trying to sell him, like, hey, guy, I'm not just a girl's toy here. We have a boy's toy now. And his song, right? That seemed kind of more like a marketing deal to me.
I'm not sure. Did you look into the history of the characters?
So with everything that I found, they were always together. And what's awkward is they're supposed to be sweethearts. But then for this and then in other animated specials, they're brother and sister.
What it reminded me of, the song No Girl's Toy, was the toy that came out in the 80s called My Buddy, which was a doll made for little boys. And that is actually what inspired the Chucky franchise. That didn't really tie in very well.
That's okay. I was going to say we can add Game of Thrones as an influence here as well now.
The fact that they were depicted as a couple in like all of their other marketing probably explains why the critics had a problem with that song.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I think that it was just, they thought it was a weird transition, but I'm like, it's very clearly established multiple times in this movie. They are brother and sister. So Lisa, I guess now it's time for the big question. What did you think about this movie watching it now and rewatching it again?
I think the music is really good and the animation is very interesting. I think, yeah, I enjoyed watching it again. It was very, very cold. So that definitely affected the viewing. I think that it's a really strange movie from several decades ago now. And I wish that the director, what was his name?
Richard Williams.
I wish he'd gotten more of an opportunity to do more because I love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's one of my favorite movies ever. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I definitely get that. I fully agree with you that there's a lot of potential in this movie and there are a lot of cool things, but alas, it did not get its due. Okay, Bailey, I think that's it. Thank you for letting me host and fill your shoes. So Bailey to Bailey, thank you so much. So yeah, if you want to send us out, thank you to everyone that came and watched.
Not yet.
Keep your videos.
Thank you all for coming to my birthday party. This has been Memory Static.
Return your videos.
Return your videos.
Starbeam.
The slow-moving time machine
is voiced by... Original song is written and produced by Time Smarties. Find more music at memorystatic.com/timesmarties. To learn more about the film events, follow Memory Static Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you like the show, please consider donating to our Patreon. If you have stories to share about any movie we've covered, please write us at memorystatic@gmail.com. Special thanks to our guest,
Bailey.
And thank you to all of our party guests. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.